Okay, so this is the third talk about the chapter in the Bodhisattva Charitamrita by Master Shantideva on effort. And definition of effort, tsunkan gelatoa o. You know, what is effort? It's to have a good time doing good things. Exactly that. And so in this, we've reached a point in the chapter where Master Shantideva has been discussing gache. Gache means hardships, like hard things that you have to do for the Dharma. You know, difficult things that you might be called on to do sooner or later for the sake of the Dharma. And he got to the point about, you know, these bodhisattvas like Nagarjuna himself, Acharya Nagarjuna, Arya Nagarjuna himself. There's a story that the way he died was that there was a young prince who was influenced by his mother to ask Nagarjuna for his head. And Nagarjuna, being a bodhisattva, agreed. And that's actually how he died. He gave his head to this boy who wanted it, you know. And long story. But then Master Shantideva has reached a point in the text where he says, people might ask you, you know, if I have to do things like that, I don't think I'll ever get to be a big-time bodhisattva. It seems too difficult. You know, I can imagine being patient with my boss, you know, or I can imagine making effort in my morning meditations and things like that. But the idea of cutting off my head, or there's this classic thing in the scriptures of reaching into your eye socket and ripping out your eyeball and handing it to someone who needs an eye, without anesthesia, okay? I mean, just reaching in with your own finger and pulling out your eyeball. So Master Shantideva has reached a point in the text where he wants to talk about, you know, is that even possible for people like us? And should we be discouraged by imagining that kind of activity? Because we know we can't do it. You know, we're pretty sure we could never do it. And he's been talking about that subject. So we're continuing with that subject. And I think the next verse to me is one of the most important ones in the whole text. So I'm going to read it in Tibetan. Hector is supposed to be reading these things, but we're like finishing a half hour before class and there's no time. So I'm going to read it in Tibetan and then I'll gloss it in Tibetan, okay? It says, Dikpa Pangchu Dungyang Me Kepe Chen Amiga Me Dita Lopa Topa Dan Dipe Sem Dan Lula Nu. Dikpa Pangchu Dungyang Me. The question is, where the text picks up today is, when a bodhisattva does something like that, does it hurt them? I mean, how can they do that? You know, is it that they have some tremendous willpower to overcome the pain? Or is it maybe the case that they don't even feel anything? You know, that it doesn't hurt to do it. And the answer is very interesting, okay? He says, Dikpa Pancha Dungyang Me. Dikpa Pancha Dungyang Me means, it's very interesting. By the time you get to the point in your bodhisattva career where you're called upon to do something like give up your arm or your eye or your kidneys or something like that, there's no pain. It doesn't hurt. Okay? Dikpa Pancha Dungyang Me means, I mean, if you tried to do it now, assuming you're not a bodhisattva, a high bodhisattva, I don't know who you are. You know, it's one thing we learn in the monastery, first class in logic. You know, which means, who knows who's who in this room? You know, I don't know who you are. I don't know what level you are. You know, you could have achieved Buddhahood a million years ago, and you would still look the same to me. So assuming there are no high bodhisattvas here, which we don't know, he says, Dipa Pancha Dungama. Dipa Pancha Dungama means, by the time you reach that state of being a high bodhisattva, you are so clean karmically, you know, you are acting so well that it doesn't hurt anymore. It doesn't hurt. It feels like giving away what? Summa salt. Carrots and potatoes. Okay? I mean, the emotive content of reaching into your eye socket and pulling out your eyeball and handing it to someone respectfully is the same as reaching into your refrigerator, picking up an old potato, and handing it to someone. It doesn't hurt anymore. Why? You have to understand that, you know, New York is empty, and you are empty, and your mind is empty. That's what we talked about Buddha nature last time. New York is empty, your mind is empty, and your body is empty. So New York City eventually could turn into a paradise for you. It depends on you. New York City doesn't have to be good or bad. New York City is empty. Whether you see New York City as a dirty, bustling, dangerous city, or whether you see it as the Big Apple full of opportunity, or whether you see it as a tantric paradise, it's all up to you. You know, and we talked about it in, I think it was in the Friday night class, what keeps you from seeing New York as paradise, and therefore New York being paradise, is mostly not your major bad deeds. You know, it's not that anyone in this room much has murdered anybody or embezzled all their company's money or, you know, lied in a way that sold their country to another country or something like that. I mean, we do these low-level, constant, puny, wimpy, bad karmas, like being irritated at people as we walk down the street. And the collective energy of all those minor bad karmas keeps us from seeing New York as a sacred place. And it's only that. So what do you imagine happens when you go to Kachara Paradise, you know? Is it that you've been a normal person for 25, 35, 45 years, and you've just been acting like everyone else has been acting, and no different? Low-level bad deeds all day long, you know, low-level bad karma in your mind all day long, you know, small things. And then, is something going to change suddenly? And Vajrayogini decides, oh, you know, he's 45 now, you know, maybe time to take him to paradise. And flies down and grabs you and takes you to paradise, you know. Is that the way it works, you know? Is it that she makes some decision and she comes down, and out of all the people, David Sykes is the lucky one. David Sykes wins the lottery, you know, and let's take him today. You know, let's leave the rest of the people forever. Let them all die, you know, let them get cancer. This one can have AIDS, this one can be in a car accident. And we'll take David Sykes today. It doesn't work like that. I mean, it doesn't happen like that. It's a gradual change in your perceptions, which means a change in your reality, because you know and I know that reality consists of your perceptions of reality. Reality is your perception of reality. When you get to paradise, it'll just be plain old New York City perceived as paradise, but that's the same thing as paradise, and you have to think about that. And it doesn't happen in a day. Rome wasn't built in a day. It happens slowly. As your practice gets better, and your mental afflictions get less. As Master Shantideva pointed out about irritating people, they'll start to get less and less. As your practice improves, you will meet fewer and fewer irritating people. That's why he says, try to cherish them now. You know, look around you at all the people who irritate you and think fondly of them, because they ain't gonna be around too long. You know, cherish them while they're still here. Because in a year from now or 2 years from now, they're all going to be gone. The same people may still be in your life, but they won't be irritating you because you're not creating bad karma. So you won't be able to perceive them as irritating anymore. You will say, if you're into self-existence, right, they changed. But they didn't change. It was your karma was improving. And so actually, New York turning into a Buddha paradise is a gradual change. And by the time that you've been a bodhisattva for a while, and it's time to give away your eyeball, you do not have enough bad karma left to feel the pain. Okay? That's the way it works. And it feels fine. And it's no trouble at all. So what he's saying is don't get giluk, right? What's giluk? Yeah, don't get giluk. Don't get discouraged, you know? You can do it. Because by the time you get to that, it'll be no problem. You are not allowed. The Buddha prohibited normal beginning people from trying things like that. Don't do any act of charity which is beyond your capacity. You know, start with potatoes and start with vegetables and build up. If you build up slowly every day, like exercising, you'll be able to do anything. If you try to do, you know, give away your house tomorrow, you'll regret it in a week and then you'll feel bad and you won't like the person you gave it to. Like Rinpoche was offered a house, I remember, by some lady, had a burst of devotion, you know, in Washington, D.C. and said, Rinpoche, I'll sign my house over to you. And he said, it's okay, you keep it, you know. And, you know, like a month later, she was actually gone. And, you know, you shouldn't do things before you're ready. Start steady, slow and steady wins the race. Start giving away things. And then when your capacity is more, do more. It's like weightlifting or jogging or dancing or anything else. Start with what you can handle. But by the time you reach that stage, that it's time to do the very heavy duty things like throwing yourself in front of a car to protect someone or jumping on a bomb or something to protect the other people around you, you won't hesitate and it won't hurt. You know, it won't seem any trouble at all to you. Okay? And he goes on to say that there are two sources. It says here, Ditar Lopa Topadang Dikpe Semdan Lula Nu means, really there are two sources to all pain. And if you understand those two sources, you'll understand why for a high-level bodhisattva, these things just don't hurt anymore. Okay? And I'm going to write those down. The first two lines of the root text said, Dikpa Pancha Dunga Met, because they have slowly given up all their bad karma, they don't feel any pain. Kepe Chirna Miga Me, and because they have become wise, they don't feel any mental suffering. You know, it doesn't make them sad to give away their eyeball. Okay? They don't miss it. Okay? And then he goes on to describe the opposite. Dita lopa topa dan dipe sem dan lula nu. And he's describing the two things which cause all mental and physical suffering. Okay? He's talking about the converse. He's saying, because these high bodhisattvas don't have these two problems, they don't have any problem with giving away their eyeballs and stuff. And if you do have these two problems, you're always going to be in pain, no matter what. Whether you give away your eyeball or you don't give it away, your eyeball itself is going to cause you pain. Why? Two causes. Ki, Tak, Dang, Dakir, Shemba, sorry. Normally it's Sungwa. Shemba. Okay, same thing. I mean, normally it's Sungwa in philosophy. Kangsak means person. Kangsak means person. Dak means self-existence. Okay, the self-existence of a person. Dung means and. Dakir means the thing that belongs to the self-existent person. Okay? The thing that belongs. We can say it like this. To believe in a self-existent me or mine. Okay? To believe in a self-existent me or mine. Okay? To believe that anything about you or anything about your parts, meaning your mind, your mental functions, your physical body, could be self-existent. To believe that is the source, is one of the two sources of all pain, of all physical and mental pain. This is a clue, he says, why high bodhisattvas don't have a problem when it comes time to cut off their fingers and offer them to somebody if needs it, something to put in their soup tonight or something. Okay? They don't have a problem with that. Because they don't, first of all, they don't have this thing which causes all the physical and mental pain that people have. It's the tendency to believe that you exist self-existently and that everything about you is self-existent that causes all suffering. When you have the wheel of life and you have the blind man in the first of the 12 links, that represents very specifically the belief that I myself, you know, Michael Roach or whoever you are, fill in your name, it's about yourself, or my arms or my legs or my mind are self-existent that causes all suffering. And because bodhisattvas don't have that, they don't feel any problem. Like, the longer you get, the higher you get in your bodhisattva career, as you go through the 10 bhumis, the 10 bodhisattva levels, your tendency to see things as self-existent gets less and less. Your inborn tendency gets less and less. Up about the 8th level, it starts to disappear completely. Okay? So as time goes on, you become less and less of a problem for you. It becomes less and less of a problem for you. You're not committing bad deeds. You cannot commit a bad deed unless you have this. Okay? If you don't have ignorance, you cannot commit a bad deed. Period. And you can't have a mental affliction. It's very interesting. Okay? And if you don't have a mental affliction or a bad deed, you cannot have suffering. Impossible. Okay? It's very interesting. Okay? And he's talking about mental and physical. He's very strict about it. I'll talk about the other cause of bad deeds and the other cause of suffering, and then we'll see how it relates, okay? Number two, say sokcha, sok, ki, dikpa. Sokcha, soki, dikpa. Okay, sokcha means cutting life, it means killing. Killing any living thing. Sokcha means killing any living thing. Sok means etc. Dikpa means bad deeds. Okay, bad deeds. Hurting other people. Hurting other things. Okay? Hurting any living thing, including yourself. Okay? Sokcha soki dikpa. And these are the two causes of all physical and mental suffering. All physical and mental pain. Because bodhisattvas don't have them, or they are on a track where they are getting less and less and less and less and less, they can't have pain. Okay, even if they wanted to. I mean, they could sit there and stick a knife in their arm and they wouldn't feel so bad. Okay? And so Master Shantideva takes the opportunity to point out that this is what's causing all your mental and physical suffering. So he's on the subject of why bodhisattvas, why it doesn't bother them to do these extraordinary things and why you shouldn't feel discouraged that you can't do it right now, because if you just lower these two things, you'll be able to do it later. And then he takes the opportunity, by the way, if you want to know what causes all your physical and mental suffering, this is it. And this gets me on one of my favorite subjects, okay? What do you do if you have a mental or physical problem in this life? You know, I would say physical problem like some kind of illness, like you have a chronic disease, like you have chronic fatigue, you have chronic hip problem or bone problem, you don't digest food so well, something like that. You have problems digesting food. Or mentally, you're prone to depression. You have problems with low self-esteem. You know, you get nervous easily. You can't concentrate on things. You got Lyme's disease or something, you know, and your physical and your mental parts are affected. And then people come to me and say, should I take this medicine or that medicine? You know, please choose a medicine for me, you know. And you know, should I go to this psychiatrist or this psychiatrist? Or should I not, you know, what should I do? You know, basically, it's a dumb question. It's an irrelevant question. If you go to Dr. A and it works, it's not because of the doctor. It's because you stopped these two causes of suffering. You stopped seeing things as self-existent, and you stopped hurting other people. And if you go to Dr. B and it doesn't work, if his treatment doesn't work, it's because you didn't stop those two. So it's a moot point, you know. What he's saying is, not only does it work for bodhisattvas, you know, gradually, eventually, you can do anything to your body and it won't hurt. You know, eventually you can stay up for 7 days or 10 years like Lama Zopa or something, and it doesn't hurt anymore. Because you don't have any more causes for suffering. It won't hurt anymore. It's not like he's a Superman. For him it doesn't hurt. But he has stopped the two causes of it. So people come to me and say, you know, I think I should give up this food or that food, or I think I should eat this food or this food. It's irrelevant. You know, you can eat whatever you want. It won't make you healthy, or it will make you healthy, depending on those two things and nothing else. You know, if you want to be healthy, stop these two. If you want to be happy and not depressed or feel low self-esteem or all the other problems that psychiatrists claim to cure, which they don't cure, which your karma cures, stop these two. Learn how to stop them. And as you work on them, your body will get healthier and healthier, and your mind will get clearer and clearer and happier and happier. And that's just the way it works. And there's no other way. It doesn't work any other way. Yeah. Oh, be careful. Be careful. I'm not talking about self-existent medication. Okay? I'm talking about empty medication. In Buddhism, all medication is empty. There's no self-existent medication. And you can prove that. You know, give the same medication to 100 people. 30% will be cured, 30% will get worse, and 30% won't happen anything. Mostly, most often. I mean, especially psychiatric cures. That's why there's 300 schools of psychiatry that are practiced in New York City on any given day. No, seriously, and I'm not putting it down. I'm saying, if it works, it's because of your projections caused by your good karma. If it doesn't work, it's because of your projections caused by your bad karma. If you want the medicine to work, which it will work, it could work, you have to be good. And you have to stop seeing things as self-existent. And that is the bottom line on health, mental or physical. And this is where, this is the root text. This is the scripture. Really. You know, medicine is not self-existent. Food is not self-existent. You know, if food was self-existent, then everybody could eat vegetables and no one would ever get cancer or die. You know. But there's lots of people who eat very well and get these horrible diseases and die. It's related to your virtue, and it's related to your outlook. Oh, conventionally, if you have been a good person, that medicine will work. And conventionally, if you've been a bad person, that psychiatric treatment, rather than curing you, will make you crazier. You know, and you've seen that. What I'm saying is it's independent of that. That's not why it works. If that was why it worked, then it would work for everybody equally, and it doesn't, so it obviously doesn't work that way. And you just didn't notice it. You know. And that's the truth. It's really the truth. You want to be healthy, be good to other people. You know. You want to be happy, same thing. And start fighting your your vision of things as self-existent. Learn what emptiness is. Study emptiness carefully. Start to act on that study. Meditate on it deeply. And you will be healthy, and your mind will be clear and pure. And eventually, I mean, if you take it to an extreme, your body will transform, and your mind will transform. And that's Buddha nature, right? The emptiness of your mind and the emptiness of your body is what makes it possible for you to become a Buddha. And you will. And then you won't have any health problems. At all. Really, this is the source of all, you know, the whole vitamin thing is a scam. Okay. And later on he'll say, by the way, this always works. You know, if it's a real cause, it works all the time. Things that aren't real causes don't work all the time. And then people have to argue about it. My psychiatric treatment works better than theirs. No, mine is better. You know. But neither one cures everybody. So it's not the cause of the cure. Okay. The other way is experiential. I said, try it. You know, try it for 6 months. Try it for a year. Stop hurting other people, verbally or physically, and stop thinking bad thoughts. And then work on emptiness. Work to understand emptiness. And it will profoundly affect your mind and your body. Also in the higher teachings, which are secret, there's a profound connection between your health and and your view, whether or not you understand emptiness. Profound, you know, and you can demonstrate it. But that we can't talk about that, okay? And when you're ready, you should do that. When the time comes, the time will come when it's time to do that, okay? And properly.
Okay.
Okay, next one. Let me make sure I did the homework. I'm just going to read you the, it's like a blessing, okay? Semjin dundu jachir pung, mo ten ga dan towa yin, mo pa dunga ji pa dan, de yi pen yin sanbe ke, de tar mi chun cho pang de, mo da nga gya ga dan tor, lo ten wang yu top ki mi, chun du pe chir beba cha. Okay. He starts to talk again about four forces, okay? We already had four forces. We had the four forces of the king. What they were, elephanteers, charioteers, cavalry, and infantry, okay? And you've had four forces of purification in the past. This is a new four forces, okay? It's still compared to the king's four forces, but it's a different four forces, or it's kind of the same four forces, but kind of different four forces. And anyway, you have to answer it on your homework. So this is the four I'm talking about coming up now, all right? Say, Mepetop. Mepetop. Mepa means here willpower, will, willpower. Dope means force. This is the force of will, or wanting something to happen. Okay. In Buddhism, does willpower mean if the dentist is drilling your teeth, you can willpower the pain away? No. Why? Where's the pain come from? Those two sources. If you have those two sources, you're going to feel pain no matter how good your willpower is. If you avoid those two sources, and then you have willpower, you may be able to withstand the pain. But the willpower is coming from your goodness and your understanding of emptiness. Okay? If it works, it's really that. If it doesn't work, it was really that. Okay?
Mepetop means
not willpower in the sense of that, but will here means you start to get an inkling of the tremendous energy behind karma and what it produces. You know, you start to get some kind of feeling, which is cool because we're Americans, we just met Buddhism, we're fresh, you know. You can intellectually develop this instinct of how powerful karma is. You know, you can start to understand that if you get angry for a moment, you can ruin years of effort karmically. You can wipe it out, erase it in a moment of anger. You know, you start to appreciate that. And then what happens? You get Mepetop. Mepetop is like willpower. Like, I want to know more, and I want to learn to do what's right and what's wrong. I want to know what's right and what's wrong. Because if it's true that a moment of anger can wipe out my efforts for years, then I want to know what to do. So Mepetop means I want to learn what's the right thing to do. I want to learn more about karma. It's like some kind of drive. Okay? You can call it drive. Yeah. There's a different word for aspiration. Actually, Mepa is defined with the other word, Dumba, which means aspiration. So it's very close. But it means like, I want to know, you know, and I want to find out, and I'm going to study. That's one kind of effort, right? Like, I'm going to find out what this thing is, and I'm going to find out what's good and what's bad. The study of what's good and what's bad, ethics, consumes 16,000 pages of the canon. You know, the Buddha, it took him like 50 years to teach what's right and what's wrong. It takes a long time to learn. If you're not omniscient, you know, studying it, what's a good thing to do? What's a wrong thing to do? What are the exceptions? It takes a long time. It takes a long time to study it. So this is like some kind of will or decision. I'm going to do that. Okay, that's force number one. Number two. Somebody later has to make a computer program with all the karmic, what do they call that? Different ways that things can, what do they call it? Permutations, yeah. Somebody has to do a computer program based on the Vinaya and the birth stories of the Buddha, the Jataka. You know, 16,000 pages worth. And then somebody has to do a thing about all the permutations, like if you get angry with this particular feeling, there's like 30 different permutations, you know. And
It'll be nice. We should do that.
Say, Tenpi Top. Tenpi Top. Tenpa means steadfast. Steadfast. You know, like, you know, not moving, not shifting, no. Okay? Tenpa in colloquial means, you know, it doesn't rock, it's steady. Steady as a rock. Okay? Tenpa. Tenpi Top means force, the force of steadfastness, of being steadfast. And in the final pages of this chapter, Master Shantideva goes off several times on this subject, and it's the following. Decide what you're going to do with your life. Think about what you want to do with your life. You have very, very limited hours in your life, you know, especially in this insane American custom of working 50 out of 52 weeks for food, you know, and leaving the 2 weeks for your life. You know, that's like 97% and 3%. It's crazy that you're going to work 97% of the time to do what you want 3% of the time. It's crazy. It's insane. You know, and given that system that we are in, you don't have any time. You know, you don't have any time. You have, you know, we're struggling for an hour in the morning and a half hour at night to do our practice. And that's it. And, you know, if you don't fall asleep and hit your head on the closet, like I did, like a couple weeks ago, you know, trying to meditate at 1 a.m., it doesn't work. You know, you have very, very few hours in your life. Very, very few. Your energy is leaking away. You know, don't kid yourself. A year from now, you won't have nearly as much energy as you have now. 2 years from now, it'll be worse. 5 years from now, you won't be able to recognize yourself. You know, it's leaking away at a very steady rate. Tenpi Top means investigate carefully what you want to do with your life. Think carefully what you want to do with your time. And decide before you start something new, even if it's virtuous, even if it's a good thing, study whether you have the resources to finish it or not. You know, study whether or not you will be able to follow through and complete this new spiritual program you have, or this virtuous project you've decided to undertake. You know, study it carefully before you start. Master Shantideva is very adamant. You know, matsam nani chogyin o means not starting in the first place is great, he says. Compared to what? Compared to starting and then pooping out. You know, he says, it says in the root text, choke. Choke means what? Mao chanara choka choke. What's it mean? Supreme. He doesn't just say better. He says supreme. He says not doing it is supreme. You know, in the context of starting all these virtuous things and then pooping out, or not having time to finish them, and never investigating it before you started. So he says take carefully look at it, and if it's not something you can carry through to the end, don't start it. But once you start it, Tenpi Top. Once you start it, Tenpi Top. Never stop. You know, what is that? Like a mad dog, you know, just clench onto it and stick with it until the end, you know, until you die or it's done. Only two choices, right? You die or the thing gets done. And just clench onto it and finish it. And you have to have that willpower. You have to have that steadfastness that once you undertake a virtuous activity, decide that until you bring it to its conclusion, you die before you stop. Okay? And you have to have that resolution, right, in your mind.
Okay. Third one.
Hope is check it out before you start, and once you start, die before you stop.
Okay.
Say Gawe Top. Gawe Top. Gawa means here joy. Okay, joy, it also means happiness, it also means bliss.
Here it means joy.
And Master Shantideva is very specific about it. he says, this is the third thing you have to do as a bodhisattva. By the way, to undertake deeds on behalf of all living beings, you have to have gawaitom. You have to have all four forces. Number three is, you have to enjoy it the way a child enjoys a very, very good video game. You know, he says, chibadani tsamushin, you know, means, you know, like a child who's totally engrossed in a game, you know, who's like, you know, like you've seen him with the, what do they call, Game Boys in the subway, you know. And gawaitop means that, like you're totally engrossed in good deeds, in your practice. And you just love it. And gawa means you really enjoy it and you're happy about it. And it's like a kid in a candy store, okay? It's like, and he says it has two qualities. One is michepa. Michepa means you refuse to take a break, okay? Like mom says, time for dinner, you know, and you say, I'm not eating tonight, you know, I gotta get to the end of this game, you know? And it's like, have such a good time about your practice that you don't wanna stop. You know, like, I'm sorry, you know, if somebody says, let's go do something else. You say, no, I can't stop for a minute, you know, I just gotta do this, you know, this is very, very much pleasure for me, you know? And then the second part is mingomba. Mingomba means insatiable. Okay, insatiable. Like you finish one game and you're ready to start another one. You know, and you just can't. You stay up all night. It's like the internet or something. You know, or the web. You know, like you're just so into it that you'll stay up all night because you finish one thing and then you want to do another thing and then you want to do another thing and another. He says your bodhisattvas are supposed to be busy. Because there's this conflict between the Hinayana ideal and the Mahayana ideal. I mean, the Hinayana ideal is go sit in a monastery 10 miles from the nearest town, devote yourself to sitting quietly, and don't do too much. And then the Shantideva, the Mahayana, is insatiable, mingomba. You know, go for it. And once you're into one virtuous thing, assuming you can handle it, go on to another one, do another one, do another one, do another one, and don't stop. You know, just do it all night long. If you can do it all night long, do it all night long and help other people. Go for it. You know, help other people. Does that mean you shouldn't go to a monastery and sit there and meditate? No, because that's one of the things that you're supposed to be doing. And that's one of the games that you can be insatiable about. So yeah, a three-year retreat is insatiable. Okay? I also want to do a three-year retreat. You know, on top of all that stuff I'm doing, I'm also going to do a three retreat. I mean, but you have to be like insatiable. You have to have a big appetite. Bodhisattva appetite, you know. Like your heart is bigger than your stomach, or I don't know. But you can't get enough. And you keep making up new things you can do for people. Assuming you can handle it. And if you can't handle it, you're supposed to slow down. Right? That's the Buddha prohibited you from overdoing it and hurting yourself. You know, but keep expanding at a rate that you can handle, and be mingomba and have a good time. Have a good time about it. And never, you know, don't stop. Except when, number four. Say, dorwa top. Dorwa top. Dorwa is a little bit of a bad word. It means to junk something, like, to throw away garbage is called torwa. To give up your Buddhism is called torwa. Okay? But this torwa is a good torwa. Okay? This torwa means, I call it the force of leaving off. Leaving off. The force of leaving off. And what it means is, as a bodhisattva, it's your responsibility and your duty to know when you're tired. You know, when you've got to a point physically or mentally, when you're not strong anymore, when you got tired, you're physically tired out or you're mentally tired out. And if you went further, you would hurt yourself. You know, and you see that. You know, you see people who do one more sadhana at night and then they fall asleep or they get crazy or they do 20 bad deeds the next day because they're tired out. You know, you have to, part of a bodhisattva's way of life is to know when you're tired and to rest. You know, to rest when the time comes to rest, and to be able to rest wisely, you know. But this is the fourth force, you know, to know what your limits are. Because you will often see that good people who push themselves too hard in the Dharma, they end up just quitting, you know. And I've seen it many times. And Rinpoche is very strong about it, you know. We have seen it many times over the last 20, 25 years. You know, somebody goes gung-ho about Dharma, and they tire themselves out, and then they just quit. They quit everything. And that's a big danger. So Bodhisattva has to know, okay, I'm getting tired. If I go another half hour, I'm going to start getting cranky at one of the nuns or something. And so maybe I better slow down, you know, maybe I better take a rest now. You know, maybe I better go home early tonight and not stay up all night, and maybe I better sleep tonight. It's wiser for me to sleep tonight. I'll be more used to people. I'll be a better bodhisattva if I go home and get some rest tonight, you know. Or if I eat a nice, you know, go out and have a nice meal somewhere. There's time for everything. And there's a time to rest and refresh yourself. You could really call it the force of refreshing yourself, maybe. But it's to know when to dorwa, you know, when to give it up, when to take your rest, okay? Master Shantideva says, he doesn't leave it there. He says, by the way, go home, take a rest, and then you better get your ass up off the bed and get back to work, you know? He doesn't leave it there. He says, you also have to know when to get back up and start working again, okay? He says, and you better jump up out of bed and go back to your Dharma stuff, you know? He doesn't leave it with relaxing. He says, relax the right amount of time and then jump back up and do your Bodhisattva stuff, okay? Let's see if we want to do one more. We'll go for about 3 more minutes and then take a break. There's a sutra called Dorje Gyantsen. Dorje Gyantsen Gido. Okay? Dorje means what? Diamonds, please. Okay? Do means stone. J means the Lord or the King. King of stones is diamond. Of course. And Gyantsen means a victory banner. Victory banner means, you know, in the old days when the Nepalese attacked the Tibetans and captured Gyantse, you know, they would put up this big gold silk thing and march around the city and show off, you know, we beat you. You know, that's a victory banner. And this is where it is, diamond victory banner. There's a sutra called that, okay? And in that banner, in that sutra, Master Shantideva quotes the sutra. He says, you should act like they say in the sutra. You know, you should bring things to a conclusion in the way that they mention in that sutra. You should learn to gain, what did I say, get closure? Get closure on your good activities the way they describe in that sutra. Okay? And it's some kind of, it's called ngagya. Say ngagya. Ngagya. Nga means me, I. Gyal means Gyalpo, means king. Ngagya means I'm the king. And it's the Tibetan word for pride. It's the Tibetan word for pride. It also means confidence. And as in English, I mean, it can go either way. Pride is a bad thing. Confidence is a good thing. Confidence allows you to bring your virtues to a successful closure. You know, confidence is what you need to get over the obstacles that are going to come to you. Anytime you do a good deed, and the bigger it is, the worse it is, you will get obstacles. It's the nature of those deeds. The more powerful your good deeds get, you can bet, you can expect, you can wait, it will come. Dangerous, major obstacles. You know, bad things will happen. Physical problems, social problems, you know, problems in your group, people will attack you, things will happen. The more powerful the virtue you're doing, you can count on negative things happening, and you have to be ready for them. Nagyal is that. Nagyal is like, I don't give a, you know, I'm going to take it to the end. You know, it's just some kind of tough guy, you know, Clint Eastwood thing, all right, as Rinpoche would say. You know, and Dirty Harry actually is what he would say. And you have to have guts. You know, Nagyo means, I'm going to be a tough guy and I'm going to bring this to a conclusion. What's that got to do with that sutra? That sutra is interesting. In the sutra, what they say is, picture the sun coming up. Okay, so picture the sun coming up. Now picture, you can picture Manhattan, okay? And imagine three conditions in Manhattan, you know? One person is standing in a big open space in Central Park. Okay, one person is standing there. Then there's another person who's blind. Person is blind. Okay? And there's another person down on, where I used to work, 6th Avenue between 43rd and 45th. It's all these like 20-story buildings, okay? So imagine those three possibilities. That's what the sutra says. You know, and it's talking in terms of mountains, okay? But I think skyscrapers are okay. So there's a blind guy, there's somebody standing on 6th Avenue between 43rd and 45th, and then there's somebody standing out in a big field in Central Park. And the sun is coming up. The sun is coming up. And so the blind guy says what? I don't see anything. You know, yeah, it's warm. But visually, he doesn't see any, he doesn't see any glorious shining rays, you know. He doesn't see anything. Okay? And then there's this guy on 43rd Street, 6th Avenue, and the buildings are blocking the sun. He wasn't smart enough to get down to Central Park. He has positioned himself in a place where the sun can't reach him. So he can sit there and kvetch about or complain about not getting any tan, but it's his fault because he's standing in a bad place. Is it the sun's fault? I mean, the sun is very democratic, you know. The sun is shining. The sun's nature is shining. The sun doesn't know how to do anything else. The sun's job and the sun's nature is to shine, you know. So maybe you're stupid enough to stand under the skyscraper. You're not going to get any sun. Or if you're blind, you know, sorry, that's your problem. The sun is shining all the time. And the guy who's standing in Central Park is going to get a big dose of sunshine. Okay? And that's what the sutra says. Then the sutra says, what's this got to do with bodhisattvas finishing up things? It says, bodhisattvas shine. Their activity, those six actions, you know, giving, etc., morality, patience, effort, meditation, wisdom, etc., all these activities, bodhisattvas are always shining. They're always doing these things. There's certain people who won't get it. There's a certain percentage of people who just won't get it. You know, they'll say, this guy looks crazy, this guy looks stupid, this guy's naive, this guy's off his rocker. You know, a certain number of people just won't get it. And you'll meet them. And you can do your bodhisattva activity towards them, and they'll either get angry or turned off or confused. Or they'll say, I don't understand what you're doing, you know, I don't like what you're doing. They're like the blind man and the man standing. Because of a problem with them, the sun won't hit them. The sunlight won't touch them. But the bodhisattvas are like, their nature is to shine, you know, and maybe you're blind, but it's, maybe you can't see what they're doing, or maybe you're even scared by what they're doing, or you're turned off by what they're doing, or mostly you could care less what they're doing, but they're shining all the time. And they don't start feeling bad. You know, the sun doesn't go, oh my gosh, you know, somebody down there can't see me. Or, you know, that guy's hiding under that skyscraper. Oh, I feel so bad. Maybe I should quit. You know. I mean, bodhisattvas just shine. And they recognize the fact that a certain percentage of the people won't get it. And they don't get discouraged. They go ahead to the end. The sun will go from east to western horizon for 12 hours, shining, you know. And he's not like going to stop because some guy, stupid guy, is standing under this big building. And he's not going to stop because some guy doesn't have eyes to see the sun, you know. He's unstoppable. You know, he's going to make his trip across the sky, either way. And whoever is Mimba means whoever's ready, you know. And whoever is Mimba means whoever's ready, you know, any disciple who's ready to receive those teachings or ready to accept those things and ready to understand those things, they will get the sunlight. And so he doesn't get discouraged by those who can't, and even by those who might negatively react to that. It's okay. I'm shining. Okay. Yeah. One quick question, because we got to take. They don't. He said, why don't they emanate in a way that they would reach the person? They are always emanating to peak performance level. Okay. A bodhisattva is always acting to peak performance level, and a Buddha. In other words, they are acting in a way which is as close to what the person can understand as exists. But some people just don't have the karma to see it. You know, if you have lousy karma and the Dalai Lama walks in this room and gives an overwhelming lecture about compassion, you'll get bored. And you'll say, why is this guy, you know, his English is pretty bad, you know? And you focus on his English or something, and you just won't get it. You know, that's bad karma. And he can't, there's only a point to which they can reach you. And they will, by the way. You know, if there's some crazy guy who's handicapped and mentally retarded and everything else, a Buddha does go to them as a dog or as some other alcoholic, you know, wandering around the street and befriend them and say nice things to them, and they push them on a little bit further, but they're not fit to hear anything else. And that's their quality. It's actually not their choice, it's your karma. The restriction is created by your karma, not by them. Okay? If you're blind or you're standing under the building, that's not their fault. I mean, they do the best they can to shine. And some people won't get it. And don't be discouraged when they don't. Okay? One more question, Tasha? Okay, you were yawning? Okay, take a break, come back in 10 minutes. Okay. I like, the next verse is one of my favorite ones. I'll read it to you, then I'll gloss it quickly. Dangni chibu chao she, dini lege ngagya ni, nyomo wame jikten di, randun duba minyate, dowe dakta minyate, dewe daki di chao. Which means, dangni chibu chao she. Dangni chibu chao she means, if I have to, I'll do it myself. Okay, if I have to, I'll do it myself. Dini lege ngagya ni, this is confidence. This is confidence about Dharma activity. And the point is this, and the commentary is very short because it doesn't need much commentary. The commentary says, if you see something which is valuable in a Dharma sense, then go for it. And if nobody helps you, that's fine. Okay, I mean, you have to have some kind of confidence that if no one else ever helps me at all, I don't care. I decided this is virtuous. I decided this is the most effective way of reaching enlightenment. And if other people don't want to help me or even cause me trouble about it, it's okay. According to my study, according to what I know, according to all I've learned, this is the right thing to do. And if the whole world rose, it's called Hwa Dam Mi Lang Na Yang. Even if the whole world with all its gods and humans and demigods rose against you and said, not only will we not help you, but we think you're a fool, or we think this is really bad, and we're going to do all we can to stop you, you should just go ahead and do it. You know, if they stick you up on a cross and nail things in your hands, okay, you know, but this is the right thing to do. I will do the right thing to do, and I don't care if nobody in the world helps me or not. And your Dharma practice has to reach that point. There will come a time in your practice that you will have to make this decision. I mean, I'm not saying it's just a possibility. I'm saying there will come a time when it will be all on your own. I think ultimately it's almost definite that there will come a day in your practice when you have to separate from the world and you say, look, I know you don't care about these things, or I know you're not interested in these things, but this is necessary to do for enlightenment. And it's okay if no one else cares about it. And it's okay if no one else is interested. And it's okay if no one else wants to go with me, it's okay. I'll do it. You know, I've decided to do it. And just be ngagyo, that's confidence. Okay? And you have to reach that point. There will come a time in your own personal practice when you will have to go by on your own. And towards a virtuous object. I think I used to run, you know. Long ago, and it dawned on me one day that if I kept waiting for my roommate to wake up, I would never be able to run well. you know. I mean, there comes a point in exercise or in learning a sport or learning to dance or learning anything that takes a lot of discipline. There comes a point at which you realize you have to do it yourself. You know, it's not like you can't wait for other people to help you. You can't wait for the teacher. You can't wait for your other students. You can't wait for a friend. If it's going to be done, you're going to do it on your own. And it gets a little lonely, but you know it's what you should do. And you just have to have that confidence, okay? And I believe that in the path between now and your enlightenment, it will certainly come a time when it dawns on you that maybe no one else in the world is even interested in these things, you know? It doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it. You must go on and do it. You must go ahead and do it. You have to be self-motivating, and you have to have the confidence to stick it out, okay? Then Master Shantideva says, Nyomo Wangme Jikden Di, the world, the whole world is at the mercy of their mental afflictions. The whole world is laboring under the merciless control of mental afflictions. Randun Drupa Minyupe, people in the world are not even capable of doing the things that they need to do to take care of themselves. Okay, much less other people. Like a normal person in samsara doesn't even know the right things to do to make themselves happy, much less someone else. So you're gonna stand there and wait around for these people? You know? Are you gonna wait for them? They can't even take care of themselves. They don't even know the right thing to do today or this morning. You know, and you're going to wait around, your bodhisattva work is going to wait around for these people? You know, get on it. Get with it. Get on with it. You know, they're not going to help you. And probably they're going to obstruct you. And probably they'll attack you at some point. And you just have to be confident in what you're doing. You have to say, what I'm doing is valuable. If no one wants to support me, no one wants to help me, I am working for sentient beings. You know, I am doing what I have learned from scripture and from practice and from Lama's kindness is the best way to reach enlightenment and to help other people. And if no one else thinks so, that's all right. I will go ahead myself. And I think it will come to each person here. At some point in your spiritual path, you will have to make that kind of decision. And maybe it's making that decision that allows you to reach Buddhahood, I think. You know, it's that resolution that gives you enough good karma to go over the top, you know. I think it's like that. Dowe Dr. Minute, Dewe Daki Dijao. People don't know how to take care of themselves. So I have to do it. It's up to me. And I will do it. And you're gonna have to reach this point where, okay, no one in my whole life, you know, nobody, no one I've ever met, cares about all the things I care about. You know, just don't care about it. They don't think it's important. No one in my family, no one at work, even the people I know who are Dharma practitioners, they don't really care enough about this thing to devote themselves to it and to put all their effort into it. So what am I going to do? Wait for them? You know, and then it comes a point where you have to just go ahead. You don't wait, and you don't feel constrained by that. You say, I'm going to go for it, you know. And particularly in your practice, there's a hierarchy of practices. You know, there's Lam Ki Rinpa, there's the Lam Rim. There's certain steps that you have to go through. You know, there's so many steps in the Lam Rim ladder. You know, you have to step number one, step number two, and you come up the ladder, you know. And if you're serious, you have to get to the top. You know, and you have to go for it. And I think a lot of people, there's a whole bunch of people that never go past the first or second step. And then there's more people who get about halfway. And I think there's people who try really hard who get close to the top. And then for some reason there's some kind of mental block there. You know, there are described practices that you must do to reach enlightenment in this life. And you must devote your life to them, and you must have the courage to go for it. But there's some kind of mental thing where they stop, you know, and they want to spend the rest of their time doing something which is comfortable and not as virtuous. And it's definitely not going to take them to enlightenment in this lifetime, in this month or next year or something like that. And when you get to that point, you have to, it takes an extra nagyal to go ahead. And that's nagyal in the sense of the secret teachings. Okay? And you have to learn that. There's a whole nother nagyal. But you got to go, when you reach that point, you got to go for that too. And you, if you hesitate, or you doubt yourself, or you're waiting for other people to come with you, you might not do it. You might not make it. You know, I think there's even a point in the highest teachings, there is a thing called Nagyal, and you have to reach that one too. And you have to not be shy about it. You got to have confidence. And then you have to do it. And not to do it is to be, not to do it is a lack of compassion. You know, to stop close to the top and rest and wait for other people, and to get those teachings and not do them, it means you really don't care about other people, because you could reach enlightenment in this life. You know, you could do it, and what it really boils down to is you're not thinking about other people. You know, you're taking your time because you don't feel any. You're actually expressing a willingness to put up with the suffering of the world. You know, I don't need to act that fast, you know, but you're just letting other people suffer. And then in the meantime, people die. You know, I had a good friend die yesterday, good friend. And he knew about the Dharma. He talked about the Dharma. He talked about studying the Dharma. You know, we had plans, you know. We really had plans. We had big plans. And he had big plans, you know, and he was going to do it. You know, he came and looked at all the course books and said, I'm going to do this, you know, I am going to do it, you know. He died yesterday, you know, it's finished, you know. They found his body somewhere. I still don't know what happened exactly. You know, they're trying to find out where he was and why he was there and everything. And I remember all the plans we had, you know, and it's over with. This can't do anything now. Okay, listen, okay. Shiwe drudan tegyuna, kayang kading taburchu, kelde dagni nyam chungna, tungwa chungwang. I like this. This is a metaphor. You know, he's giving a little story. Shiwe Dru means a snake that died already, a dead snake. Okay, Shiwe Dru. There's this classic competition in scripture between snakes and Garudas. Okay, snakes hate Garudas and Garudas hate snakes. What's a Garuda? A Garuda is like a phoenix bird, you know, it's this mythical bird. Huge, if you ever see Indonesia Airlines, it's Garuda is their thing, and it's on the tail of their airplanes, you know. Garuda is this huge, you know, fantastically huge mythical bird, like a phoenix, like, I don't know, 70, 80 foot wingspan or something, okay? And they hate snakes, and they're these powerful, they're the king of birds, you know, and they're always guiding them. Whenever you see one in a tanka, they always have a snake hanging out of their mouth, you know. They like to attack snakes. And they swoop down and they just snap them like that. And they kill them in the moment, you know. So this is an image of Master Shantideva. He's talking about, you're on this road in India, you know, this old dirt road. And there's a dead snake there. And then this crow shows up and sees the dead snake and says, I'm going to play Garuda today, you know. And he goes, you know, he attacks the snake, you know. And the snake is dead already, you know. And so the snake can't put up much of a fight, really. And this crow is like Garudaizing this snake, you know, like, I'm a mighty Garuda, you know. And he's like playing with the snake and beating up the snake, you know. And what's the image? The image is, don't be wimpy, he says. If your effort, if your guts, if your determination, if your confidence is like the snake, okay, then it won't take a Garuda to derail you. A crow could do it. Meaning, you just have some small problem in your life and your practice is all off track. It's all thrown off track. You know, like a small thing happens. You know, somebody blows up at you at work and you just suddenly all your practice evaporates. You know, like if you don't have effort, if you don't enjoy good deeds, then your practice will be like a dead snake. And then even this stupid crow can come and act like a Garuda towards you, you know, beat you up. Your mental afflictions can come and beat you up because you're so wimpy. Okay? So he says you have to get confidence from the beginning in your practice. And bad times will come. You know, hard times will come. And there isn't anyone who got enlightened without some very, very bad times. You know, and you have to get ready for it, and you have to plan for it, you have to anticipate it. The better your practice is going, probably the worse the fall is going to be, you know, and it will come. There will come some very bad times, and you have to get strong and get ready for it. And that's what he's saying, okay, it's to get ready. Next verse is, Ngagyal chendai wangmindro, teda ngagyal da wangyul, nyomo ngagyal kir kengni, nyendro ngagyal kir tichin, mi gadun chombadang shengi sesai, tendang ni lemba, This is an interesting verse. Now Master Shantideva shifts the focus. He says, I want you to have confidence, but don't let confidence degenerate into pride. Okay? And then he starts talking about pride. Okay, so this is his excuse to talk about pride. So he's been talking about having like the supreme confidence in yourself and this willingness to undergo any kind of suffering and pain and to be a tough guy and to overcome the bad times. But then he says, don't let it degenerate into pride. And that's a much different thing. Okay? And then he just starts to describe pride. And he describes it in sort of ironic terms. I mean, the point of pride, the reason for pride, the reason people feel pride, and I can tell you because it's one of my specialties, is that you think people like you, or you're good at what you do, or you're very smart, or you're very beautiful, or you're very strong, or you're very confident, or it doesn't matter. You have some quality that you believe sets you apart from other people. The ironic thing is, Master Shantideva says, that if you continue that behavior, it will cause the opposite. And he gives a whole list. Karmically, it's very, what do you call it, ironic, you know? It's very nasty. It's very bad news that the more pride you get, the bigger the fall will be, you know? That karmically, if you have pride and if you feel pride, it must force you down to lose all of the good qualities you're proud about. It's very interesting. If you're proud about your physical appearance long enough, it will destroy your physical appearance. If you're proud about your intellect long enough, it will destroy your ability to think clearly. It's very interesting. And then you'll get Lyme's disease. You get something that will ruin your mind, you know, and you'll say, why did that happen? You know, if you're proud about any quality that you have, the karma of being proud is that you lose it. It's very interesting, you know. If you want to, let's put it the other way around. If you have a quality that you're proud of, and that you like, you know, like maybe I'm not so handsome, but I have a good mind, you know. And if you're proud about that, if you would like to destroy your good mind, be proud. You know, that's what the converse is. You know, if you have some quality that you like about yourself and you want to destroy it, then start feeling pride about it. And you'll definitely lose it. The karma of that will make you lose it. Then he gives a list of, this is on your homework, okay? He gives a long list of the results of pride, karmically. What does pride do to you karmically? You don't have to get all of them, but you should get most of them on your... And I'll start doing them in Tibetan also, because you're going to need it in Tibetan. Nyendro means the three lower realms, okay? Nyendro means the three lower realms. Nyendor means to the three lower realms. Ti means it will drag you, kicking, okay, to the three lower realms. And karmically, if you have enough pride in this life that you are very arrogant, after you die, you will go to one of the three lower realms. It's a cause, okay? It's a cause for that. That's one result. They say even if you don't go to a lower realm, if you're born a human, and also, even in this life, yide chom means happiness, you know, mental happiness, happiness of your mind. Chom means it will destroy it. You know, you cannot maintain a strong sense of pride over an extended period of time without becoming an unhappy person, period. It ruins your happiness. You cannot maintain happiness over a period of time if you have pride. Pride will ruin it.
Okay. Say, long me,
tsoa. Long me, tsoa. Long me means begging. Begging. Begging for money.
Tsoa means that's how you make your living. It means
if you keep up pride long enough, it starts to affect your material happiness. See, not just your mental happiness, but it starts to affect your material prosperity. It's very interesting. Okay, the stronger your pride gets, and the longer you allow it to go on, it will start to affect your finances. Okay? All right? Very interesting. Especially in the next life, but also in this life. Okay? Just generally, if you have pride for long enough, it will start to affect your ability to make money.
Say,
Shenwang, Kirpa. Shenwang, Kirpa. Shenwang means the authority of others or the power of others. Kirpa means you will become. And what Shenwang Kirpa means is that you will always be in a position in life. Your life will start to change. This is talking about how to create your own samsara. I mean, we're always talking about how to create your own Buddha paradise, right? If you want to create your own samsara, be proud and let pride grow in you. And New York, which used to be kind of okay, will get worse and worse. And it'll be a hell for you by the time you die. Shenwang Gyopa means you will start to lose authority. Karmically, you will always be number two at work. Karmically, someone else will always be the supervisor. Karmically, they'll always pass you up for promotions. You know, karmically, you'll never be in control of your life. It'll always be someone else bossing you around, telling what you do. And if you want to know where that came from, it's from pride. It's very interesting. You know, from the emotion of thinking how big you are and how great you are, comes a karmic backlash of you are always in a position where other people are always calling the shots and you don't get to. Okay? You meet people who are very frustrated by that, and that's where it comes from. Mm-hmm. Karmically. Say, Shepa Lemba. Shepa Lemba. Shepa Lemba means just, there's no better word in English than stupid. Okay? You will get stupid. Intellectually. Your intellectual powers will decrease. The longer that you allow pride to exist in your mind, it starts to destroy your IQ. Seriously. Okay? I mean, it's not just makes you an arrogant and unpleasant person. It actually starts to destroy your ability to think and your intelligence. And especially in the next life, but also in this life. And you meet people like that. You know, just the... And it's... Ironically, they're often proud about their intellect. And then it's that pride which makes them more and more stupid as they get older.
Let's say, Sukh Midupa. Sukh Midupa.
Sukh in this case means your physical appearance. Okay? Your physical appearance.
Me means not. Dukh, you have to be careful because dukh
comes in the word dungao, which means suffering, but as an adjective dukpa, it means to be beautiful. So when you're translating, be careful, I warn you, okay? You will translate it completely backwards someday. Dukpa means beautiful. Midupa means ugly. If you maintain a sense of pride long enough, and if it gets obsessive enough, it actually makes your face uglier. It makes your appearance uglier to other people. You see, it's not self-existent. You could be foxy or something. But other people start to see you as ugly. It's interesting. I mean, people see the weirdest things as beautiful, right? Andy Warhol art and stuff like that. And then people see sometimes beautiful things just strike everybody as ugly. And that's karma. That's the person's karma. It's the karma of being proud about your appearance is that you will lose that appearance. It's very interesting. I think Franklin said, virtue may not make you beautiful, but non-virtue does make you ugly, you know, in this life, you know. And if you maintain a non-virtuous state of mind long enough, I think your face starts to reflect it, and other people can smell it from your face. And when they look at your face, they immediately detect it, you know, and you start to actually look
bad to people if you keep it up over a long enough period of time. Say nyam chungwa. Nyam chungwa. Now say nyam chung. Nyam chung. Nyam chung is very colloquial. You know, if you want to learn spoken Tibetan, nyam chung is very common. It's the Tibetan word for shy or bashful. You know, you come in the room and you say, oh, this guy's really nyam chung. You know, nyam chung. Nyam chung also means modest in colloquial. In the literary language, nyam chung means you have lost your self-confidence. Okay? You low self-esteem or something like that. It's a lack of confidence. You lose your confidence. And I think you see this, I see it in business. You know, if a man is arrogant long enough in business, you see people, it's a very classic cycle in business. They start out with no money, they make more and more and more, their business takes off, and they reach this thing of where nothing can go wrong. Everything they do hits the market and makes a huge success. And then inevitably, you know, just about the time they get very proud, they have this incredible plummet. You know, I've seen it over and over and over and over again. There's this peak, and then they come down. And then nothing they can do is right. You know, and every decision they make is wrong. And then they get nyam chung. Nyam chung means you start to doubt yourself. You know, you start to lose it. You start to lose your confidence. And you become like, you can't make decisions anymore, and you're afraid to take a step, you're afraid to move. And so they freeze, and then the company goes down faster, you know. And I've seen it in business a lot. It comes from arrogance. It's a direct result of, you get to a point of arrogance where you start abusing your employees, abusing other people, and then there's this big drop, you know. Last one, nyepa. Shenki nyepa. Shenki nyepa means other people will start to abuse you, okay? People start to talk bad about you. People start to do things to you physically, verbally, attack you. Like that, shenki nyepa. And that's a result of arrogance. And you've seen it. You know, if a person stays arrogant long enough, if they have pride long enough, you're never so intelligent or so beautiful or so muscular that... Bo Jackson, I remember watching him on TV with Rinpoche, you know, and he's this incredible baseball player, you know, just bursting with muscles, you know. And then he was going to do football and baseball at the same time, like the first person to ever do it professionally, you know. And then he's on all the Nike commercials, you know, Bo can do everything, you know, there's these jokes. Bo Jackson can do everything, you know, and they have him dressed up in soccer, and he plays soccer, and then he does baseball, and then he does diving, and then he does track, and he was getting really arrogant. Then he broke his hip. He couldn't walk for a long time, and it was over with. He just couldn't do anything. Bo couldn't do anything, you know, and couldn't walk. And that's just, you know, it comes from that. The arrogance reaches a certain point, pride, and then it falls. And all of these things are karmically related. All these things are karma results, you know. You can't escape them. If you want to have pride, then get ready. You know, you will have them. They will come. Okay. So he says you must distinguish pride from confidence. You know, you must have confidence in your practice, which means determination and guts to get through the hard times. But don't let it slide down into arrogance or pride. Okay. For those of you who are not writing the Tibetan, I mean, somebody said, why do you spend so much time on two Hindu gods that don't exist anymore and nobody even believes in them anymore? Why do we have to meditate every week on these two guys that nobody even knows about anymore? Well, obviously, it was meant partly to cover the Big Bang Theory and the Creator Theory. I mean, and then somebody said to me at lunch, but you know, Americans in New York especially, they don't go around blaming the Big Bang or the Creator on the boss at work that makes them mad. So why spend so much time on it? I mean, really, when you're focusing on your boss who's screaming at you and you're trying to put up with this person, it's not like you're obsessed with the idea, oh, you know, goddamn that Big Bang, you know, that created my boss. Or this, you know, I'm really sick and tired of the Creator because I have to face this boss every day. I mean, no, people don't normally go to work and whine about the Big Bang or a Creator, you know. So they said, why don't you emphasize more in class that the normal American problem in dealing with the source, the true source of the things that irritate you, the true source of the things that make you angry,
is that most people never even think about it. You know, it's not that we believe, we're so strongly tied into the idea of a creator that we blame God every morning for our boss, or that you blame the physicists in the Big Bang for your boss. Most people are standing there with their boss screaming at them, and it never occurs to them to say, why am I here in the first place? You know, where did this guy come from? Why did I ever meet this stupid Israeli guy, you know? I was just happy down in Howell, New Jersey, you know, and minding my own business, you know. And then I met this guy. I mean, it was very tenuous, you know. I saw him for 5 minutes, we had a bit of a conversation, and then it's 16 years of suffering with this guy, you know. So, you know, why? Why did I bump into him, you know? What happened? You know, and that's what you have to meditate on, okay? It's like, it's the big question, you know. Where did this guy come from? Why did I bump into this guy? Why 5 minutes of conversation causes me 16 years of getting screamed at, you know? That's the question, okay? All right. Say Nyomong, Wangme, Jigden, Di, Rangdun, Dupar, Minu, Pe, Dowe, Daktar, Minu, Te, Dewe, Daki, Dijao. Okay. Nyomong Wangme means Nyomong Wangme Jigten. Jigten means the whole world. Wangme means they're hopeless. Helpless. Helpless. Okay, helpless. Why? Nyomong. Mental afflictions. Pride, anger, desire, hatred, jealousy. Nyomong. Okay? Those emotions are making everyone in the world helpless. They don't have any choice. Okay? They're totally helpless. Okay? They are controlled by their anger, their jealousy, their desire, their hope. They can't do anything else. They're out of control. They can't help it. Okay? Rangdun Dupa means to do what would be good for themselves. Minu. They can't do it. They don't know. They're so out of control. They're so pushed around and beaten up by their jealousy, their anger, desire, that they don't even... They're incapable of helping themselves. Okay.
Drowe Dakta Minute means...
If I am able to learn how to reach enlightenment, okay, then they're not able to do what I'm able to do. Okay, Drowe means other people. Daktar means like me. Minute means they're not capable of doing what I can do. If you understand Dharma, if you study Dharma, if you master Dharma, if you start to create your own paradise using the Dharma and bringing other people there, then you can do something which other people can't. So don't sit around and wait for them. Okay? If they want to come with you, bring them, you know. If they are not ready, then do it. You know, you can't wait for other people.
Okay? De wei daki di chao.
So, given that fact, de wei
daki di chao,
I will do what's necessary.
Okay? Whatever is necessary to do, I will do. This should be this.
It means define the virtuous things you have to do, define the good things you have to do, and don't expect help from other people. It may not ever come. You can't wait, okay? If you understand Dharma, act on it, and don't wait for other people. Do what you have to do to create your own enlightenment and your own paradise. And that, from that position, you can best help other people, okay? But don't wait for other people, because they're so much out of control that they don't even know how to make themselves happy. So how on the earth are they going to support you, you know? How they're going to come in big... 80,000 people go to see the Mets play on a good day, you know? There's 80 people in here. So, you know, don't wait, you know? You're going to be waiting for a long time. If you go ahead, if you know it's virtuous, if you know it helps other people, do it. Okay? Do it yourself if you have to do it.
Okay. One last thing. Dangti. Buti sor chakpe dangti.
Poo means this is poo, okay? I didn't have time to shave all day. This is poo, okay? Poo means body hair. There's a different word in Tibetan for your this hair. Tra. This is tra, this is poo. This is poo. Okay, this is tra. Alright. Such as it is. Okay? Poo ti. Ti means a knife. And poo ti means a razor blade. Okay? Poo ti means a razor blade. So means tooth. But it, with reference to a knife or a razor, it means the edge. What do you call it? The edge of the razor blade? Yeah, the razor's edge. Okay. Puti sor means on the razor's edge. Chakpa means a big glump of something. Drangti means honey. Okay, honey. And this is such a famous metaphor that I threw it in at the end of the reading because it comes at the end of the chapter. And you always hear about it. You always hear this metaphor. It's the image of a straight razor, okay? And you cover it with honey. And then you sit there and you go like this. And it's the image of a short-term happiness, okay? Yeah. Like, for a few seconds, all you taste is the honey, you know? It's like knowing that there's honey on the edge of the razor, and because you can't control yourself, you lick it, knowing that it's going to cut you. I mean, you know, knowing that your tongue will be sliced into ribbons, but because you can't stop, you're so attracted to the honey that you're going like that. And so the whole experience of the honey lasts a few seconds, and it's over with. And they say milamtar. Milamtar means second later, the experience means nothing, you know. 10 seconds after experiencing some great happiness, it's like a dream, you know. One time I was having this really extraordinary dream. I mean, I don't think I can go into detail. No, it was really good. It was like an angel came down and spread her wings around me, you know, and it was like, oh, man. And then somebody made a noise, you know, and I woke up. And I was going to go back in the dream, you know. I said, I really wanted to go back. I really, really wanted to go back. So I was thinking, I'll go back in the dream. And I laid down very carefully, and I didn't get up, and I didn't roll over. I just tried to get back in the exact same position, you know. And you close your eyes, and as you can imagine, nothing happens at all. You're just sitting there, you know. And Master Shantideva was always talking about that. You know, once the dream is over, once you wake up, it's meaningless. You know, all the pleasure you can ever get in this life, on the last day, it counts for nothing. It's worthless. Maybe there's some dim memory of it, you know. But then the blade comes, you know, then the razor comes. Like all the karma you collected to get those things comes to you, you know. So the image is, the honey is sense objects. Things you can eat, things you can touch, things you can hear. And then the razor blade is actions that you do to get them. You know, chasing after, and especially any negative action. And they say, it's a very famous, so I just didn't want you to study the Bodhisattva Charvatara. We're done with the effort chapter. Everybody has effort, okay? Joy. And you're done with it, but you shouldn't leave it without knowing this image, okay? And that's, don't waste your time on sense objects. Don't waste your time on food. Don't waste your time on music. Don't waste your time on clothing. You know, forget it. It doesn't mean anything. You know, 10 minutes after you have that emotion or that feeling, it's all over with. And if you ever did anything negative to get it, you have to live with that. That's the razor blade. Okay, the razor blade is under it. Okay? It just won't make you happy. The other image of the razor blade is that you can never be satisfied. You can't fill up that desire for those things, you know. Once you have one good meal, you want another one. Once you have one pleasant sensory experience, you want another one. You can never get enough. That's the razor blade. The true razor blade is even crueler than bad karma. It's this insatiable desire to keep having it. And you can't fill it. You'll never be able to fill it up. And it will just keep torturing you as you live. So he's saying, forget sense objects, you know. I mean, if you're in a laundromat and Stevie Ray Vaughan comes on the radio, listen, it's fun, it's nice, you know? But don't go out and hurt somebody to get it, you know? Or don't overeat to get these little pleasures and waste your money, waste your time, waste your life. You know, don't forget it. You know, concentrate on the important things, which is not sense objects. You know, animals do that. That's okay. Then Master Shantideva says, look, don't lose your awareness, you know. When you go into a restaurant and there's this incredible Mexican food there and you know you have to meditate in half an hour, you know, control yourself. You know, use your brains, use your Dharma brains. And then somebody says, but I can't, you know. It's there. It's like my favorite food, you know. And I know I won't be able to think in half an hour. This happened to me last night. I'm describing a real thing. And I even told my people sitting next to me, I said, it was Ragnar, right? And I said, don't let me eat more than 5 of these chips, you know. And he's like, but you just had 6, you know. And I'm like, you know, because I won't be able, I wasn't, I ruined my meditation that night, last night. And you're sitting there, and Master Shantideva says, you can control yourself. You just need to train yourself. And then other people say, no, I can't do it. You know, it's too subtle. You know, it only takes me about 10 seconds to get angry at my boss. If you know someone like my lady boss who can push your buttons, like expert, perfect, exactly goes for your jugular button, you know, that's the one button that really bothers you. It seems like some kind of, what do you call it, ESP or something. Like they could read your mind and they know exactly the thing that would bother you the most. And then they do it day after day, you know. Then people are saying to Master Shantideva, the gap between the time that they say it or they do it to me and the time when anger arises in me, it's too short a time. You know, you can't expect me to respond that quickly. I can't turn on my patience that quickly. The lead time is too short. I can't make the order, you know. There's no way I can not respond. And Master Shantideva, the last thing in the chapter, he says, come on, you can do it. You know, the human capacity for watchfulness or awareness is infinite. It's unbelievable. You know, you can do it. You can stop yourself within 10 seconds or 5 seconds. You can get it down to like, I can respond. My patience will come up within 3 seconds after someone hitting me or something. You know, before I have time to hit him back, my patience is already up and I'm already stopped. He says, you do have the capacity. And then he gives a very beautiful image. It's very famous. And that's really the last thing. He says, if somebody puts a bowl in your hand and they fill it up with like oil, cooking oil, okay? And they say, okay, Tessie, here's a bowl of cooking oil. Start here and walk to the door and don't spill a drop. And they fill it up to the, you know how the tension, water tension, like it's up to the edge and it's a little over the edge. And you're like, impossible, I can't do it, you know. And they say, you got to get to the door without spilling a drop. And you say, I can't do it, there's no way I can do it. And then they pull a knife out, like a very, very sharp knife, you know, like one of these, what do you call it, switchblade, very sharp switchblade. And they say, I'll walk behind you. You know, like this, really like this. And if one drop goes out, you're dead. I'll kill you. I will really kill you. I will cut your throat. You know, now see if you can do it. You know, and it's the image. This is the image in the end of the chapter. He's saying the human capacity to stay aware is endless, is infinite. You know, if you really wanted to, if you had the right motivation, you know, you could watch yourself every second of the day. You would never slip. You know, a mental affliction would never express itself. You would never yell back at your boss. You know, you have that capacity. You just don't want to admit it. You know, put a bowl of cooking oil on your hands. Have the guy with a switchblade walk you to the door. You'll make it. You won't drop a drop. You know, you won't spill a drop. The human capacity for concentration under the right incentive is unbelievable, you know. He says, check it out. He says, you can do it. You know, you just don't want to, or you don't believe it.
You know, you think, you don't think the odds are that serious, but they are. You know, karmically, if karma is true, then one moment of anger at your boss is worse than somebody slicing your face with a knife. Much worse. The results will be much worse. And you have to get to the point where you believe that. You know. Then your awareness will suddenly improve. You know, Nagarjuna, last thing, okay, promise. Nagarjuna said, it's very bad luck. He said, there's one very nasty thing about samsara. It's when you hurt somebody, the karma doesn't come back immediately. You know, people are always asking me, this is my favorite question, you know, can I kill roaches in my apartment? You know, it's very dear to my heart, right? And they say, is it okay to kill roaches in my apartment? You know, they really bother me, they make the place dirty, it's dangerous. I say, look, imagine as you crush the roach that your ribs start to break. And then you ask me this question. You know, forget philosophy. Forget right and wrong. You know, forget what you really want to do, which is to get rid of all these little stupid things. You know, because they're just inconvenient for you. If as you stepped on them, your own ribs started to break, what would you do? You don't have to ask me. I can't give you any exception from the laws of karma. You know, I can't say laws of karma don't apply to you, but they apply to everybody else, you know. They apply to everybody. And if you step on them, much worse things will happen. If you kill one roach, much worse things than having your ribs broken will happen. It's just the way it is. I can't give you an exception from gravity or something. Could you please cancel gravity in my apartment next week? You know, it's a law of nature that whatever harm you do to someone will come back much stronger. So don't ask me stupid questions like, is it okay if I kill roaches, you know? If the time gap was zero, you wouldn't ask. And so he says, it's as if a knife is up to your throat all the time. And you just don't admit it. You don't want to admit it. You want to do what you want to do, you know. Be as aware in your religious life, in your spiritual life. Keep the amount of awareness you would have as if somebody had a knife up to your face. Okay. That's all. I was picking on the idea of a creator God. Actually, Master Shantideva was. Why? In what context? Are we trying to beat the other guys? No. We're trying to figure out where did all the things that cause you suffering come from? You know, who made the traffic jams? Who made your boss? You know, who made your wife that you can't stand anymore? You know, who made them? Where did they come from? And then we are analyzing whether or not they could have been created by some guy. And then one of the arguments was, this guy cannot exist because if he made everything, who made him? It's very simple, okay? And then another question is, if he's eternal or unchanging, I know what you're asking, I'm coming to it. Because somebody told me you were going to say this. If he's unchanging, then how can he do anything? You know, if you're unchanging, then you can't work 6 days and take Sunday off if you're unchanging, because on Sunday you would change. Okay? So it can't be that. Now, what if they turn it around, he's saying? You Buddhists are always giving this argument of why the mind is beginningless. And you say the mind lasted forever because you cannot point to a moment of your consciousness which was not created by a moment of consciousness immediately preceding it. It takes consciousness to make consciousness. Therefore, consciousness never had a beginning. So what if one of these creatorists come up to you and say, "Hey, our God is the same as you, your mind thing, okay? He's eternal, and he's changing from moment to moment. It takes God to make God, and he's always been, and no problem with that, okay?" That was what the master. Now, what do you do if someone gives you that argument? That's kind of hard. How about I'll tell you next week. Let me think about it.